Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
A really tough segment we have coming up. Very, very tough. So one that intrigues Bob and me, kind of stimulates the intellect a bit. Meanwhile, others get into the fetal position and say, please just let us play the games.
By the way, what is it you were doing during the news there? I was hearing a lot of paper shuffling. And a lot of clicking going on during the news. You weren't.
I was sitting here.
You weren't researching the 2010 LSU roster and or the 2019 LSU roster and potential junior high prospects that they have and getting ready for that game, were you?
You know better than that. I don't even look at the people that are being recruited by Penn State.
You were looking at the verbal commitments that LSU has from junior high players.
No, I was looking through resumes for the co-hosting job in this show.
Oh, unfortunately, you don't have any. All right, got to move on now.
I got a whole bunch here.
Oh, okay.
last answer you expected.
Yeah, it wasn't the one I was hoping for, but it was effective nonetheless.
Well, here comes the segment you dread every month.
Yeah, I know. This is when we talk about the dollars and cents, and it doesn't make any sense to me.
Tony Knopp is the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management in Los Angeles. Tony, welcome back to the show. Kevin's been anxious to hear from you. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, how are you guys doing this week? It's an exciting week, huh?
Yeah, it was an exciting week. And not only that, but, you know, your area, of course, is tickets. It's dovetailing into additional ticket sales for Penn State. The ticket office has been very busy the last 2 days after the big Michigan win, and they're selling games right now.
That's always a good thing. You know, winning is the great disinfectant, right? It cures all ails at the box office when it comes to light attendance or even some things that are below numbers. And the good news is it's better for college football, at least the people we deal with on the corporate and sponsorship side, when you have the powerhouses being powerhouses. When you have Penn State and Michigan and Ohio State being powerhouses, it's just good for the landscape altogether.
Well, there are a couple of things we'll get to in just a few moments. But take, for example, Penn State, Michigan. Penn State starting in 2001 and then Michigan, I want to say 2010, 2011, in their stadium expansions, corporate suites were very important. On the college landscape, what has that meant to programs that put in luxury suites at the power programs?
You know, the revenue for luxury suites is so much higher than the regular seats that I think if Joe Public, it's not something you can really educate Joe Public on because it takes a little while to understand revenue streams and the long-term deals that they do with these suites. But the reality is that most teams, I mean, the suite level is generating anywhere from 2 to 5 times as much revenue as just the regular seats are. So you would think that season tickets is really the lifeblood of sporting events, but not necessarily, right? Season tickets are generally one-year contracts. They have a very high renewal rate. You know, Steve goes and buys a season ticket to Penn State football. Odds are you're going to stick around, 90% chance you're going to stick around for the next few years.
Right.
Suites are sold on 1, 3, 5, and 10-year contracts. That's money in the bank. That's money in the bank that you can use on facilities. That's money in the bank you can use on Heisman campaigns. That's money in the bank you can use on different things you can do to really recruit the best players. And so one of the things that's going to continue to really shift the landscape of college football is the ability to leverage premium seating and the corporate dollar. Because, look, I mean, to get the exact same bounce, Penn State can put in 25 luxury suites or 100,000 more people in regular seats, which is more realistic.
Right, and some of these suites, some people opt for 10-year deals on them. Mm-hmm. That kind of revenue stream, when an athletic director, whomever it happens to be, sits down That's money that they sit in the budget. It is already counted upon. Big.
It's accounted for. It can go towards anything you can imagine to give yourself a competitive advantage. And you're starting to see universities really catch up because they're getting better facilities and better coaches. For example, you and I remember when the Oregon Ducks were the laughingstock of college football on the West Coast. Now they have some of the best facilities in sports, thanks to Uncle Phil. Oklahoma State's doing the same thing.
Right.
With their oil barons.
T. Boone Pickens, yeah.
You know, T. Boone Pickens, right? They're really buying their way into the upper echelon in college sports, and so it's a dangerous place for people who have been powerhouses for quite a while, like a Penn State, like, you know, Michigan, who they need to catch up. They need to make sure that they're not leaving that revenue on the side. It is different from the pro sports. A lot of times in the pro sports, what the fans may not know is, like in the NFL, for example, blackout rules and regulations and the revenue sharing on tickets actually doesn't apply to club seats and suites.
Right.
So when Jerry Jones at AT&T Stadium built 300 suites and 5,000 club seats, that's money he doesn't have to share with other teams. That's not what's happening in college. They don't have any revenue sharing. They don't share any merchandise. What's happening there is they're looking at, how do we get this revenue lift here on the side that doesn't affect our normal fan base, where it allows us to capitalize on the corporate buyer so that we can compete on the back end, so we can have the facility, so we can pay the coach.
Right.
And that's what's happening.
And on the pro side, if people wonder why Los Angeles doesn't have a pro team, why the Raiders moved back to Oakland, the answer is quite simple. The Raiders were not selling out what was then a larger L.A. Coliseum. All 8 home games every year, Tony, were blacked out.
Every one of them. Yep, every one of them. And they're having the problem in San Diego. The NFL actually had to buy out the tickets so that they could avoid a blackout.
Yeah.
And that comes down to, we need to make sure that it's being seen across all of our different platforms, because they have more money in it now than just people attending. You know, back in the 80s and the early 90s, when the Raiders were playing in Los Angeles, you're really looking at not a lot of revenue streams, and tickets was a very important piece of that. Well, now you have massive global sponsorships, you have digital rights, you have rights to the fantasy guys, you have all this different money, that sometimes it's a loss leader to just say, you know what, forget it. We're going to buy out the 10,000 San Diego tickets that didn't sell, because we need to get this game out there. In the end, we'll get that money back. So it's definitely changed. You know, Los Angeles has proven that they have the corporate wherewithal to fill a stadium. The problem with the Raider brand was, it just was not a brand that spoke to the corporate customer
right in
Los Angeles.
Of course not. No, and
yeah.
nor would it. I mean, we know what Al Davis was a very good businessman, but we also know what the MO of the club happened to be.
Yeah.
And it's not the wine, cheese, brie, Beverly Hills group. No question about that.
It comes down to, Steve, it's, you know, when you're running a major brand, you have to watch out for even the people on the exterior.
Right.
And so you've got to be safe. You can't speak up, so to speak, on a number of different items. We're going to talk about the Redskins in a second here. And that's something where, good luck getting any of the major companies out there to take a side on this, because there's nothing for them to gain. There's nothing for them. Oh, it's just
right.
Everything for them to lose. And that's the circumstance that they had with the Raiders in Los Angeles is, you know, yes, there's a lot of benefit of going to an NFL event, but there's a whole lot of things that can go wrong. The UFC is running into the same issue. They're printing money. They sell out arenas faster than almost anything. For the Fertitta brothers and Dana White are geniuses.
Right.
But they're not getting the corporate backing they want. And it's just because when you're sitting in the chair at Acme Incorporated, a Fortune 10 company, somebody dies in that octagon and there's my logo.
Right.
They're going to show it over and over again, and guess who's tied to it subconsciously forever? It's just not worth the effort.
Now let's get to the Redskins part, because Bob Costas delivered a powerful commentary on Sunday Night Football, but he did it, by the way, in such a way where it doesn't offend the league, and he didn't call out Daniel Snyder by name and so forth. The branding of the Redskins, which, by the way, started in Boston, and they were actually the Boston
yep.
Redskins first. That's where the name emanated from. Corporately, they can't take a side, Tony. If they were to change the name, what is the gauge that you're getting, not from companies, from tickets and so forth? Because I think that there'd be actually a fan base that would be mad about this, you know,
oh, yeah.
no matter how
yeah,
right
definitely.
Right it may be. But what about that part of it?
You know, when it comes to the corporate side, they're not as merchandise driven, so I'm not sure it's going to make as big a difference as far as the dollars they're going to get from them on, seat renewals and things like that. Daniel Snyder came in to Washington and, you know, made a lot of changes that people weren't happy with when he did it. You know, FedEx Field and,
right.
you know, made a lot of changes, sold a lot of naming rights. People already kind of, you know, spoke their issues there. I don't think you're going to hear anything publicly from corporations. That doesn't mean they don't believe one thing or another. I'm sure you sit down CEOs at any of the Fortune 10, and they'll tell you that they have a very strong opinion one way or another of whether it should stay and whether it should go. The real reality of it is there are as many people who are vehemently on the it should stay side as there are it should go. However, in the PC culture we're in now, you can't vocalize that. You know,
Tony, there's a fine line. There's a fine line in this, and I think corporations are staying on the line and just don't want to talk.
There's nothing for them to gain.
Right.
There's absolutely nothing for them to get out of this. They'll alienate one side or the other. So their whole goal is, I don't want to play. I want to stay as far away from this as I possibly can. As far as, you know, the corporation's involvement with the team, I don't think it changes the corporation's involvement with the team. It's such a strong, the team itself, however the brand is referred to, is such a strong brand in itself.
Yeah.
And it's so, the fan base is so loyal. It's, I think, the third strongest brand in the NFL right now. I don't think it makes much difference. And, you know, I'll be curious to see what happens because, you know, once that happens, there are a million other ones out there. I mean, people always talk about, you know, the ones who haven't changed, like the Fighting Irish, like the Atlanta Braves, but they don't talk a lot about the ones that did, like the Stanford Cardinals.
Right. Yeah, they were the Stanford Indians at one point. Marquette changed. UMass and St. John's, for example, were both referred to as the Redmen. They changed. Now Stanford and now St. John's is the Red Storm and UMass is the Minutemen. Merchandise-wise, it would be interesting, Tony, because you would see people. There'd be two different kinds, Tony. I think you'd see people gobbling up what's left of the Redskin memorabilia and people then trying to gobble up the new whatever the new logo would be. It would actually be an interesting merchandise killing, don't you think?
Hartford Whalers, right? We've spoken about that before.
Yeah, they're still in the top five in merchandise in the NHL.
Top five in merchandise in the NHL. They haven't been a team for, you know, longer than a decade. It's one of the best-selling things out there. So I don't know if people would still continue to print the Redskins name. What do you do with the Redskins name? Does the NFL continue to control it? I mean, isn't that a little bit hypocritical if you say, we're going to change the name now because we have found that this is offensive to an entire peoples, which I can certainly have sensitivity towards. But then what happens? Do you release the name? Do you say, okay, well, we release our trademark rights, and now anybody can go out there and sell Washington Redskins memorabilia and make bank on it while the NFL is left holding the bag? Do you say we're going to keep printing Redskins memorabilia and then go out and give the money to charity? Well, you're still putting offensive memorabilia out on the market. It's a really tough spot. And the one thing here is, just like you're not going to get corporations involved in this battle, you are going to get all the NFL teams involved in the battle because the merchandise is split. So it actually does affect the other teams as to what happens here.
Right. An additional, well, they're floating around the possibility of putting Thursday night up for bid or maybe adding a game someplace else. The printing press that is the NFL, you know darn well that if they put something up for bid, whether it's Thursday or a different package, they're going to get heavy bids.
Yeah, they do. They do very well. I know I saw this morning that they're denying they're talking about Thursday night. We'll see. I mean, I'm sure it's something that has been discussed. The issue is more, you know, where do you find that other game if you do? Sunday night might make sense, having the late game on Sunday night. The West Coast games generally don't draw the greatest ratings compared to the East Coast games, which is why you see a whole lot more, you know, New York Giants, Dallas Cowboys Sunday nighters than
right.
you do, you know, San Francisco 49ers and Kansas City Chiefs or Arizona Cardinals or St. Louis Rams. So, you know, what you're doing there is you're saying, okay, well, we're going to have the Pats and the Saints play on Sunday, and that's going to be the national game. And even here in California, you're not going to be able to see the Cardinals and the 49ers unless you have a package. Why not move that game to the late game like they did with the Raiders and the Chargers because of the baseball playoffs?
Right.
And the ratings, I think, kind of woke everybody up on that game. They looked at the buzz on social media. They looked at the ratings. They looked at the money made and said, we might be on to something here. I do think if they push for Thursday night, they're going to get a big pushback from the Players Association. There's been some safety concerns about Thursday night games.
Right.
But, look, the reality is if you put it out there with the NFL, somebody's going to pay a whole lot of money for it.
Yeah, and they will. I mean,
At
one point, and people forget, at one point TNT and ESPN split in Sunday night package. I mean, so it's not like they have not been. I mean, TNT's been involved before.
Oh, all all these guys would love to open up their wallets. I mean, they're paying big money for NHL games that are drawing 1.2 ratings, you know, as opposed to the NFL game pulling a 10. So there's no question that they want to get involved in it. The reality is, with all the changes in media right now, with streaming media and a much more fickle customer base that's out there, if you can control a live event, that's something that's stream-proof, so to speak. People aren't watching it on delay. They're interacting with it every day, like we spoke about last month. And so the reality is the NFL is going to find a way to make money on this. They've added a second game to London. Why wouldn't they do this here?
They're adding now a third game for next year. There'll be a third London game next year that they're going to add in, which is interesting. Any talk, Tony, what would an 18-game schedule mean with 9 home games for each team if they went in that direction?
Well, you know, the revenue streams on it will be interesting to see, because I assume if they do that, they're going to cut some of the preseason games. And everybody says, well, we don't watch preseason games and we don't go, but they're still paying for them. I mean, the bulk revenue that's coming in from suites and season tickets, they're already paying for the preseason games, whether they like it or not.
Right.
So I'll be curious to see how much additional lift there really is when you do add 2 more regular season games that, so to speak, have more value. I mean, you're eventually going to get to a tipping point where you dilute or water down the brand so much that people start to pay less attention. But you and I both know, we see the numbers on the back end. We're nowhere near that point. I mean, these guys are as sensitive as anybody else to the fact that there's player safety issues and we don't want to get to a point where there's too much NFL. But their ratings are a bonanza. They kill every television show out there. They're the number one thing going. And they know it. And so they're just slowly, they're being very intelligent in the way that they're slowly pushing the envelope further and further and further until they find something that may or may not work. I think that this Sunday night game they had between the Chargers and the Raiders was a very welcome thing. I think some people might have seen that as a nuisance, that Oakland came back and said, you can't have a day game anymore. I would not be surprised if the very intelligent people in the NFL office said, we've probably been talking about this for a little while. This gives us an excuse to throw it out there and see if it sticks.
Here's a possibility. Let me throw this out to you. And this is just a couple guys sitting down having a couple drinks at the local establishment. You throw the Thursday night thing out for bids, and you give the NFL Network that late Sunday night game.
Sure.
I mean,
it helps you with everything.
I mean, you throw Thursday night up for bids, but you give the NFL Network the second Sunday night game. That's a late night West Coast game or whatever, you know, whatever it happens to be, but and that's the bone you throw to your own network in terms of its stream, because it did do so shockingly well.
I think, you know, when they do look at things like that, there's going to be an issue of how do we pile this onto, how do we tag this onto some of the broader deals we're doing across all forms of media.
Right.
The NFL knows what they're doing. Roger Goodell spent time at Google, I believe, 2 months ago, talking about the package that they have with DirecTV and putting things out there. So they're very well aware that these things are going to change, and they want to be on every single screen that you have. And if that means having more content available at more times, it makes sense. I mean, the argument's always going to come from the teams in the NFLPA about player safety. The player safety has come significantly, has made significant strides. We're not in the same days where people were riding buses to games and,
right,
you know, flying, and it's just not that way anymore. They're living like kings all the way around. So I do think it's something that's going to happen. I mean, every year they talk about the 18-game schedule. The issue on the corporate side, which is the one thing I can speak to intelligently, is that if they move to an 18-game schedule, they're in no way going to be imposing on the demand that they're getting for NFL tickets.
Tony, thanks so much. Always an absolute pleasure. Appreciate it. Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. Kevin's take on the interview moments away. We'll rouse him out of the fetal position in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hey, Bob, I heard a rumor that this is the music that's going to be tested this weekend with the light display at the Jones residence. I don't know if it's true or not.
I think it requires a lot of synchronization for Steve to get it all lined up.
Yeah, it's going to take some time.
I did basketball in Orlando at Disney, and part of it was leading up to it was, it was actually Thanksgiving night, and they had dinner for us, Thanksgiving dinner at MGM. And then they took us to the lot, which was decorated. You name the lights, they had it. And to Trans-Siberian Orchestra, they put on a light show to that music that was absolutely fabulous. And Kevin hates the fact that in moments where he tries to be funny, I have a story to match it.
It is a little annoying, I must admit. It is
disconcerting.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
We've hit the accelerator to the point where we're now to the edge of the Kevin Herr rant of the day. So far, we have regaled Kevin with Bill Friedman from Big Ten Network and The Journey, John Urschel, featured tonight at 7 on BTN. Which, by the way, also includes a look back at the Michigan game. And Tony Knopp, CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, on the business side of sports.
You know, Steve, there was a report that you were talking about the Redskins and the name change and the controversy and all of that.
Right.
A report came across the wire. The Washington Redskins are thinking about changing their name. They plan to eliminate the word Washington because they're so embarrassed to be associated with the nation's capital.
We're going to eliminate the offensive part. We're
exactly.
going to drop Washington. I understand that, yeah. It would be interesting, though, that if the Redskins were to change, number one, would there be a blowback from the fans, which I don't think they will. They're already selling out the stadium at FedEx Field to begin with, and Redskins fans are as passionate a fan base as there is in the NFL. So I think they could get away with the blowback. What would be interesting is that how many old Redskin shirts would they sell before shutting it down? And then how many would they end up selling of the new jersey, new logo, new everything, should they change? They could actually make a financial killing out of this.
Last night I was listening to the news and an interesting story about this whole history, etiology of the name Redskin. Turns out it came from Newfoundland, Canada. And the British up there several hundred years ago, before Canada was a nation, called the Indians up there Redskins because they painted their bodies a red color before they went into battle. And
right.
so when the Indians attacked, we have the French and Indian War, when the British were attacked, they were attacked by what they called the Redskins, meaning
right.
these Indians who had painted their bodies red. It was not, in that sense, in the original start of this name, meant to be negative or insulting. It was who they were fighting, the men with the red skins.
Right.
And, of course, it's evolved and changed, and the political correct police got involved, and we've now changed it all around to a definition that may not be recognized by those Newfoundland British people that were fighting people with red skins painted on their bodies.
French and Indian War, George Washington was a colonel.
Yes, he was.
In the French and Indian War.
Went out to the Three Rivers area of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
1763.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. And it was important in the because and he fought for the British.
Yes.
In the French and Indian War. Kevin, of course, right now is just sitting there going, What are we doing here?
I'm actually a big fan of history, believe it or not.
And history is a big fan of yours. Time now for the Kevin Herr rant of the day.
I'm gonna take you back to Sunday night. Now, let me preface this by saying I am a big fan of Bob Costas. Like what Bob Costas has done. I actually enjoy his shows when he's in studio, and I loved it when he had an interview show on the radio that we carried on WMLP, actually. I was a big fan. But Sunday Night Football, he decided to voice his opinion on the Redskin name and gave his remarks. And they were rather scathing and direct. My problem with it is I don't know that that's the particular outlet for that. if this is your talk show, if this is your NBC sports show, absolutely, Bob. Voice your opinion. Have some guests on it. Go in deep, like we did the other day here. Try and go in deep a little bit and look at it. Get other opinions. I'm all for it. But Sunday Night Football is not the opportunity to do that. It's not a chance for you to get on a pedestal. Oh, wait a minute. Isn't that what I'm doing right here? But anyway, Sunday Night Football at halftime is not really the place for that particular comment. Have no problems with what he said, have no problems with his opinion, but would rather see that be directed on your show on NBC Sports Network, not on Sunday Night Football.
Why does it ruin your game experience?
No, it's just not the place for it. It's halftime. It's halftime. Give me the highlights. Give me the highlights from earlier in the day if you want. Give me some analyze the game. Look ahead if you want. But it's not the particular place to have that debate.
I would find it acceptable if they had a weekly commentary segment.
But I think that's what it's supposed to be. I really believe that that's what it's supposed to be.
I have it, except for that and gun control. Gun control. And he got no blowback at all on the Redskins thing. He did on gun control because it was, it was last year, it was during the debate, so forth, and that it went beyond the boundaries of sports. But he hasn't done any other commentary on any of the other subjects, I don't think.
Steve, don't you think there was a lot of discussion before the commentary made the air at NBC Sports headquarters about what to do, what to say, how to package it? I don't think it was one of those things he just sprung on the brass.
I'm not so sure.
No.
I think it was well thought out in advance, and I think they expected to have a reaction and to have it as being part of the buzz Monday, Tuesday, because, look, everybody was talking about it, including right here.
I'm not so sure, Bob. I think Bob Costas has a lot more leeway with NBC than would, let's say, Dan Patrick, for instance, on Sunday Night Football.
Well, he's the signature voice of
exactly
NBC Sports.
But nobody in the brass at NBC likes surprises like that.
Well, I'm not saying that he didn't say ahead of time that he was going to do it. I don't know if he got the okay, or if he needed to get the okay, or if he had to run by exactly what he was going to say. Like I said, what he said, I don't have a problem with what he said. I have a problem with where he said it.
It ruined your game, didn't you?
Yeah, my fantasy points were already in good shape. I was fine. And by the way, I like the idea of a second game, but I'm thinking the game should be Monday night. When San Francisco plays a home game on Monday Night Football, it is really tough to get people to get to that game early enough that it kicks off on the East Coast. I mean, basically, people are taking days off and taking vacation to go to that game. I think they would see a good result on a Monday night doubleheader, as they do to start the season, than maybe a Sunday night game. Just my thought.
You know, I'm thinking that this Sunday the Bears play the Redskins. Do you think the PETA people and the animal activists will be down there protesting the Bears? Just a thought. I'm just kidding.
So you got a group of animals leaving the zoo.
Yeah.
Hey, exactly. Yo, I'm upset.
I mean, isn't that dehumanizing? That's a poor choice of words. Dehumanizing.
Yes. Well, you know what? Only Daniel Snyder can make this. I mean, because I don't think there's a board of directors of the Redskins. I think he's it. He's 100%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really ends up coming down to him as to what he wants to do with it. He wants to keep it. I think a lot of people would like to see it justified. I would like to see an extensive survey, not just we're going to talk to 700 people and see what they say. I'd like to see an extensive survey of maybe 5 to 10,000 Native Americans and ask them, I mean, does it offend you? If it offends them, then I think, okay, we got to change this. If you find out they're not offended, then you got to sit there and say, well, maybe not. I mean, I would, their opinion means more than what my opinion. I mean, that's how I look at it.
Yeah, I think it's the man who owns it, and it's he has, in one sense, the most to gain or lose by that decision. And as you've pointed out, Steve, I think he might have a lot to gain by changing.
So. Right. Well, exactly. I mean, you know, look, I mean, they actually could gain financially.
Yeah.
They would make a killing by changing the name.
Well, yeah, everybody would have to get new jerseys, new garb.
It's more than that, Kevin. There would be people buying the old stuff first because they'd like to get it before it went out.
That as well. And then you would start seeing it on eBay for $3,000 for a towel.
And, you know, with the...
Who's going to... I mean, see, this is what bothers me. Who's going to buy it?
Oh, come on, Steve. You don't think that's going to happen? Of course it's going to happen. It's a collectible item.
If I want a towel, I'm going to Bed and Bath. All right.
But you don't... You have to be a collector to understand it. And here's something that was told to me many, many years ago. I asked, what was collectible? And the person that actually does this on a regular basis, that was at the, it was in a mall stand, and I said, what exactly is collectible anymore? And he goes, what do you like? Because if you like it, it's collectible.
You should see my antique slot machine collection, among other things that I collect. I collect beer bottle openers, the old church keys.
Oh my goodness! I've seen. I went to a friend's house in Williamsport, and he wanted to show me his basement. In his basement, he had Coca-Cola collectibles.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
All over the place. It was incredible to see. Now I realized, you know, I said I'm not a collector. I don't, you know, when I was a kid, I collected baseball cards, football cards, but I haven't collected anything since. I just don't do that. You know, some people collect coins. Some people collect stamps. Some people collect cohos. I mean, it's just...
cereal boxes.
I just happen to have an antique Coke machine in my basement, among other of my Coke memorabilia. It's just... I don't know why.
No, and I was at somebody else's house where they had an entire basement room done in a Coca-Cola motif. Tables, chairs, the whole thing. It was done as if it was an old-style 50s soda.
Mm-hmm.
Place. So I know people do different things because it's fun and so forth. Some people, you know, for example, the Marie Osmond doll collection, whatever. I understand.
I don't have that. I don't have the Marie Osmond doll collection.
Yes.
My wife keeps asking me.
Now let's turn to somebody who does. Kevin.
My wife keeps asking me, when are you going to sell some of the things in your collection? And I said, well.
Now, what have you collected?
I have. Let's see. I have the Richard Petty Pepsi bottle series. I have a couple of Wheaties boxes, some from the night. I think I have the 1980 Olympics, which was a 3-box set because they sent them out separately. I have, I think it was a Super Bowl 30 Steelers AFC Championship commemorative box that was only made in the Pittsburgh area. That was all black, no orange on that at all. It was all black and gold. And various cards, some signed, some not signed. The problem is this. My wife said, when are you going to sell those? Or when are you going to try and make some money on that? And I said, well, the problem is nobody else wants them. The strangest thing in my collection, though. All right, are you sitting down for this, Stephen?
I'm enthralled by this whole thing.
A Salt Lake City, Utah Olympics ticket from the biathlon medal round that was unused.
Oh, boy. You know, the point is...
Silence from the Sunbury Motors studio.
There are people out there that collect, as Kevin said, anything. And if the Redskins are going to change their name, if Daniel Snyder makes a decision, what he should do is go to the NFL and say, look, you guys have been pressuring me to do this. Rather than share the revenue... In, as a condition for my changing the name to whatever, I want all the revenue from the Redskins jerseys. And he would be in the millions and millions and millions.
Sure. But he seems to be determined right now not to do it. But this is not a new argument.
No,
this has come up how many times now in the past? I mean, every year this comes up.
This year it seems to be hotter, though, than most.
No, I thought it was pretty hot last year.
All right. Yeah,
I thought it was hot the year before, too. There's no difference between what I'm hearing this year and what I've heard other years. I mean, the difference is somebody asked the president, which is just an absolute waste of time. I mean, you know, Honestly,
I'm worried about that.
I mean, yo, man, solve the budget. Okay,
you know, I don't even care what his picks are for the Final Four tournament. Yeah. I would much rather have him solve another problem.
Yeah, I tune that out. If I, you know, if I want to find out what somebody thinks about the Final Four, I'll ask Dick Girardi. So you know,
go right to an expert.
Right, as we go to somebody who understands the ball is inflated, not stuffed. All right, we'll come back and wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on Pre-Auction Blowout.
Like a 2010 Ford Escape XLT, one of the most affordable fuel-efficient SUVs, just $15,995. A one-owner, newly inspected and fully serviced 2012 Ford Focus SEL, $13,998. 2010 Dodge Nitro SE comes with warranty. Lowest price promise, $17,989. 2011 Ford F-150 XLT, an outdoorsman and contractor's choice, just $29,494. And a 2012 Hyundai Sonata 2.4-liter new tires, just $14,993. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Welcome back. Outside of Finland, nobody wants a biathlon ticket.
There you go. I was a little disappointed I didn't hear that earlier. Yeah. I thought maybe there was something wrong.
Jim Irsay, by the way, is firing a few barbs in the Manning direction. Jeez, Jimmy, I would not. You know, I know you got a lot more money than me, but I wouldn't. You basically say they only won one Super Bowl. All right, you know, in 11 playoff tries. Do you know how hard it is to win one?
Real hard.
You know, so I always laugh at this. Well, his legacy needs to win two. How about you win one? You know, one's hard. Look at Mario Andretti. He only won one Indianapolis 500. Know how hard it is to win one?
Ask Michael.
Mm-hmm. Okay? I mean, it's hard. If it's so easy, then, like, there's 1,000 people up there who got it. I mean, you know, sometimes I sit back, I mean, that's why you appreciate, at least to me, I appreciate the part of winning. You know, some people say you win ugly, you win this way. Hey, look, winning is not easy. Losing's very easy. Anybody can lose. That's what makes sports fun, special, and so forth, is that it's not easy to win. So, Bob, you had something you wish to say?
I said, I'm really looking forward to the Journey show on the Big Ten Network. John Urschel, I just look up to that man. You know, there's an award given out, Steve, every year.
Yeah, the Campbell Award.
Well, also there's one by the sport. Maybe it's the same thing. The Sports Information Directors.
Yeah.
Give the Senior Scholar Athlete Award in all sports.
Right.
And Penn State has already one of those people. A good friend of mine, actually, has won that, been the only one in the country in his year. And that's Jim Martin, wrestling, 4.0 pre-med studies. But if anybody's deserving of that award and the Campbell Award, it's got to be John Urschel. My goodness gracious. A phenomenal story. And, you know, you've had him on the post-game show. Is there a more articulate, more thoughtful guy to have to interview? He is amazing. His composure is stunning.
Well, you know, he's highly intelligent. He comes off that way, and you know, and very thoughtful. And when you look, you know, as a football player, he's still a really good football player. People don't talk about that enough. Dodgers, by the way, have jumped out with a pair, bottom of the second, with Zach Greinke on the mound, leading the Cardinals 2-0. See, that's why this Cardinal 3-1 lead with Greinke today, Kershaw. After the off day pitching Friday, the Cardinals are not on easy street. I mean, they are not on easy street, even with a 3-1 lead in the series. So,
last night, Boston 1-0. What a nail biter.
Yeah, as a lifelong Red Sox fan, I can tell you, I haven't seen a lot of 1-0 games in my Red Sox lifetime. It was kind of, but see, Koji Uehara gets, again, this is the definition of a save. Doesn't go in, start the inning, and just, you know, okay, I get a save. He has a lot of 4-out, 5-out saves in the last 3 months. When they bring him into trouble in the 8th inning, gets him out of it, and then they pitches a clean 9th. That's a real save, as far as I'm concerned, where you save the game. And he's been able to do that, which is interesting because, I mean, he was just another relief pitcher for them that they picked up from Baltimore. When Hanrahan got hurt, then Bailey got hurt, he assumed the closer's role. But it's the way John Farrell manages his pitching staff that's very impressive. Tozawa has only pitched in back-to-back games on back-to-back days 8 times all season. Craig Breslow's pitched in back-to-back days, the left-hander, 7 times all season. And Uehara has only, in games that he's warmed up, he's entered every game except 2. Thus, you have Tozawa's MPH going from 92 now to 96 here at the end of the season. Breslow's miles per hour went from 91 to 94, 95. And Uehara just throws strikes. I mean, there's a game the other day, 9 pitches, 9 strikes. That's what he does all the time. And that's because I think John Farrell, along with Juan Nieves, have managed the bullpen and the pitching staff really well. And they get it. They understand how to do it.
And, you know, Boston's going up against one of the great managers in baseball.
Oh,
my
Leland's
goodness.
Great.
He's
Leland's
an incredible great. Guy. So it's a real battle of real wits there. And baseball students of the game, extraordinaire.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no question. Jim Leland's a great manager. Already has 1 championship under his belt with the Florida Marlins, the then Florida Marlins, now the Miami Marlins. And so all that. Kevin?
Yes.
Well, you got through it.
And I was actually listening. Jeez, maybe I'm starting to accept the fact that it... No, forget it.
Money's an important part of sports.
You got a lot of resumes on that pile to go through tonight, Steve.
Boy, I'll tell you right now, some great candidates.